It's Saturday morning. It's 10 o'clock. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And?
Megan Todd.
How about that? Some unusual voices this morning. A lot of you know Megan from the usual business. She's the voice of the office when you call, and others will remember from past appearances on the show, I'm sure. And for those of you who don't know her yet, you probably will one of these first days. She's plugging along with the company and with her own studies and so on, and hopefully she'll be more and more and more regular on the show because, oh gosh, it's just so much fun.
I wholeheartedly agree.
How about that? So there's nothing like enthusiasm for getting the job done. Anyway, Adam also from away today, and our so far connection is very good, but also manning the board today. We've got AJ, so it's just kind of a big crowd today, a little bit different, nothing wrong with that. So all of the regulars, welcome. Thanks for always being there because you know you're the reason we get up and do this every Saturday. And if you're new to the show, either by accident or somebody told you about it, try to stick around for the whole hour because, well, we won't promise you too much. We will always promise you that you will learn something during the course of the hour. So if you want to hear what we have to say, just sit back and relax. But if you want to talk about what you want to talk about, it's as easy as picking up the phone and dialing 904-222-8255, and you will go to the head of the class and be put on the radio. You want to ask us any questions that do not involve your own timid self? First off, we don't bite, so that's kind of silly. But if you just have questions you'd like answered, you can send an email to us at info@vanweefinancial.com, and we'll pick it up and either get to it today or next week, one way or the other. So, lots going on. If you are carrying over from the real estate show, you know that Angela said another ho-hum, dumb-down week, and it was. But there's some other stuff going on. First off, we entered a bear market, and that bear market thing is it's kind of a trigger historically for some other things. And we'll get into that as time goes by here. It is not a time to panic. It is simply another bear market, and they happen. How long they happen? They happen until they quit. How's that? So full of information.
Adam? I have some more information about that.
I figured actually. You might.
Yeah, I do. Yeah, we made it official this week on Monday. We're down 20% from the all-time high. It was set on January 3rd, so not that long ago. In fact, this is one of the fastest times to get to a bear market. Not the fastest, but one of the faster times in history. So what we know from bear markets in the last 75 years is that average losses are around 32%, and the average number of days in a bear market is 339. The only times that things hadn't turned around a year later were in 1973, 2001, and 2007. So you may remember that those were some of the worst times in history, one being the 07 Great Recession. 2001 was the tech bubble, and 1973, I am not exactly sure what caused that one. Dad, maybe you can chime in on that.
Richard Nixon, in a nutshell.
Richard Nixon.
Oh, okay. By the way, he is the one that made Father's Day official, so he got one little tiny thing right in all the time he was there, and that's about it.
Well, the average bear market that occurs in a recession sees a drop of almost 35%, while the ones that don't have a recession associated with them only drop about 28%. So because the S&P is already down almost 23% this year, getting out now and trying to time the rebound will be difficult. Not saying not to do it, but it will be very difficult to tell when this thing is over. Since 1950, there have only been three other times when the S&P 500 closed down 9 out of the last 10 weeks, and they all occurred in the middle of recessions. That is yet another data point that is leading me to believe that we are in a recession. And if you regularly listen to the show, I've been saying this for quite a few weeks now, there's a lot more data points that are starting to line up to agree with me. In all three of those times, the S&P 500 went on to experience further losses after those 9 out of 10 weeks, but then started to rally well in advance of the end of the recession, and the following year had very strong returns. Another data point that came out this week, the Fed's GDP Now model, which is supposed to sort of keep an eye on things on a weekly basis, more current reading than GDP growth, which is announced after the quarter, it's also pointing towards us being in a recession. It was predicting 2% GDP growth in the second quarter, but now it's down to 0% growth in the quarter. And if things have turned that far south that fast during the quarter, and we're still a couple weeks away from the end of the quarter, I don't think there's any reason at this point to think it won't flip negative by the end of June. I honestly think we're in a recession. I've been hedging it for a while, but now I'm getting pretty certain.
You're getting more help in the media too. I notice week after week, pundit after pundit is now saying that they agree with us and that we are probably in one at this moment. Of course, we can't. We won't know for sure because of the nature of the definition. We can't tell for sure until they announce the GDP second quarter sometime in mid-July, but it's sure starting to feel like it, isn't it?
Yeah, and the media getting on board helps talk us into it too, which is it's an odd phenomenon, but I believe that it is actually a thing where the more people talk about it, the more people get a negative outlook.
It worked for Jimmy Carter. He jawboned us into a recession. Took a few years, but he got us there.
Yeah, I just think that it's a catalyst. I don't think it's a cause, but I do think it helps, if you want to call that helping, because it's such a negative thing. But I do think it has an effect on it. So the bad news about being in a recession is obvious. Everyone knows that that is never a very fun thing to go through. But the good news is that markets are forward-looking, and that would mean that we are closer to the end of the recession than if the recession was coming next year. So markets start to turn up typically 6 to 8 months in advance of things getting better. So that would be a good bit of news should that happen. We're actually in the largest destruction of wealth in modern history right now. The amount of money lost has surpassed the COVID drawdown and passed the 2008 Great Recession.
I'm sorry, but that's a record I didn't want to see broken.
No, I sure didn't. much of that destruction actually came from the bond market, where we've lost almost $3 trillion of wealth just in bonds over the last 6-8 months. Pretty incredible.
It is. It's not something that anybody ought to be very proud of, but I know when the world is getting to the maximum upset point, and that's happening very quickly, we can tell from the reaction of our clients and our own selves too when we wake up in the morning and say, oh God, not again. And then you see at the end of every day, the futures can be green all day long like Friday, and right at the last minute, the big sell-off comes. But yesterday, only the Dow was able to dive down below the mark. And we actually got a pretty darn nice finish on the S&P and the NASDAQ. So I was left a little bit relieved from that. So I've got a trivia question for after the break, and it will be about this very subject. So don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And I'm Megan Todd.
And we are kind of all together here. You're talking basically to the whole country when you call us, or company, when you call us today. So do that if you would like to get your 2 cents worth in. Meanwhile, we have a trivia question as usual, sponsored by Ken Bales at First Coast Alarm. You can call Ken at 904-636-7888. Regarding bear markets, because what better week to talk about bear markets than this one where we just hit one? Since World War II, if you bought into the market the day it hit bear territory, the very day, which is, of course, down 20% from the prior high. What would your following 12-month return produce? What percentage return would you have gotten in any bear market by buying that day over the next 12 months? It's a whole percentage number, and I'm not going to give you any more hints than that because you don't need them. In fact, I'd rather you didn't have them. Hey, Adam, you want to clear up anything else about this week, or do you want to get rid of an ugly topic? We do have a phone call.
Okay, let's do that first.
Okay. Good morning, Chuck.
Hey, good morning, guys.
How you doing?
Good. I was going to call a few weeks ago to talk about the VIX and how it needed to get to 40, 45 before we could get a tradable bottom.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it stayed between 25 and 35 the last 2 weeks, can't seem to break out. And
that's the volatility index for those who don't follow it.
Yeah, the volatility index. There's not enough fear in the market.
Right.
And my theory is that we've had over the last 5-6 years all these V bottoms, and I think there's a lot of people hanging on for dear life, hoping for a V bottom. And I think that's why the VIX can't get above 35. Do you all have an opinion on that?
I'm not such a technical person, analysis person, to watch those things real carefully. I think this has a lot more to do with the kind of overhanging doom and gloom that's in the market right now, brought to you, of course, by every gas station in the country coast to coast. So I don't know that this is going to act like a normal thing or not, but we've got to have some positive movement in oil, I think, before we have much of a shot up. But there are things going on in there that's pretty good, too.
We did see some positive movement in oil this week. It came down almost $10 a barrel. So.
Yeah, that's right. And the refining capacity where we're having bottlenecks right now, there are a couple companies that are increasing refining capacity as we speak. That's going to add another 500,000 barrels or so to capacity, because it's not the crude, apparently. The crude is available, but we're having trouble refining and shipping, which, of course, is a congressional problem with the Jones Act. And there are little things like that that have to get done, and I think the Congress and even the White House are going to be, shall we say, severe pressure put on them to ease up just a little bit. So I don't know. My guess is as good as yours, Chuck, at this point. And it is kind of a guess.
Yeah, we've had all these orderly sell-offs, you know, about up until about 6-7 years ago, the market always did a double bottom in order to get a real triple bottom. But then we started shifting about 5-6 years ago to V bottoms.
Yep.
And now I think there's just way too many people hanging on with their fingernails for a bottom. And I think the key is we got to get a CPI number that doesn't break, you know, everything. It's got to come in slightly below expectations, and then we can foresee the end of interest rate hikes.
All right. Well, we'll test your prophecy, won't we?
Yeah.
Hey, did I tell you what? You want to take a shot at that trivia? What the return would be if you got in that day?
I'm sorry, what was the question?
It was, if you bought in, ever since World War II, if you bought into a bear market on the day it went to the bear market, what would your next 12-month return have been?
12%?
Too low.
But okay.
That's good news, if you think about it. All right, got to run, take more calls. Thank you. Appreciate the call, and I will be thinking about your prophecy, and we'll keep tabs with you over the next few weeks and see if you're correct. Because I don't know. I think it's different this time, but that's just me. All right, take care of yourself. Thanks for the call. Good morning, Phil.
Good morning. I'd like to do a short tribute. I apologize. My health is under the weather, but I'm hanging tough, and thanks for your prayers. On behalf of the community of Southern Georgia and Northeast Florida and the town of Orange Park and myself, old Phil, we want to thank your team for all the good you do every day and your show that is fantastic, 5 stars.
Well, now, you are very kind. Thank you.
You deserve it. We only give credit where it's due. That's the way I was raised. If something's wrong, you go to the source. If something's right, you find out who's at the top, and you go to the top. My Marine dad, God bless him, drilled that in my mind as a kid. Okay, fast forward. I'm going to say my original one before the other caller, I'm going to still stick to what I said because I know a little bit about that through my parents and relatives since World War II. When I got older, I learned. I want to say 31%, but I'm probably wrong.
All right, you're a little high.
Okay.
But we got a bracket now, and let's face it, that makes it easier for the rest of us.
Yeah. I hope somebody wins so you can give a Publix Carter T-shirt away, that's for sure. And if I ever win, I'm going to fast-forward my gift to the next caller. Okie doke.
All right. Thank you, Phil. We appreciate
it. Talk to you next Saturday, God willing. Okay, bye-bye. Keep up the great work.
Bye-bye. Always fun to hear from our loyals out there. Okay, Adam, did you have a little more to wrap up, I think? And then Megan's going to be talking right after the bottom of the hour about a topic that I think was really, really germane to what's going on today. So we'll keep everybody hanging for that long.
I wanted to touch on this, that the performance for a 60-40 portfolio this year, it's down 18.1%. That makes it the worst start to a year ever, and it's not even close. In 2002 and 2008, the previous records were set, and the 60-40 portfolio was down just over 6%. So, if that doesn't tell you how bad this year has been, and most of that additional downside has been provided by the bond market. If you look at all 6 month periods in history, 2008 to 2009 contained some that were worse than the current one, but it's not by much. So if this market continues to sink, this might be the worst period ever to hold a 60-40 portfolio in history. That's how bad things are out there right now.
That's pretty sad. All right, back to the phones. Good morning, Mike.
Hi, good morning. How is everybody?
Wonderful. How are you?
Hanging in there. Glad for a little rain.
Yeah, do a rain dance, everybody. We need
Absolutely. Okay, I'll take a shot at the trivia.
Sure.
I'm going to go with 23%.
Well, 23%. Actually, to probably no one's surprise, that's in my range. 22 is the real thing. So 21 to 23, as we always do things here, and that makes you the winner. Ding, 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 ding.
Very nice. Thank you.
Well, we love it. Thank you.
And thanks.
We'll put you on hold, and we can get your name and address, which I'm sure we have, but I always like to do the formal way. And then you can leave us with a promise that you'll do the best rain dance that money can buy.
I will. I will do so.
Thank you.
All right. Have a great weekend.
Thank you. You think about that, guys and girls. If you bought that very day, and usually, Adam, I think you agree with this fact, but usually that's not the end of it, right? When you buy, if you bought the day of the bear market, it usually goes down a little further.
Not just a little. It depends. If you're in a recession, it's going to, on average, drop another 15%. Versus if you're not during a recession, it drops an average of an additional 8%.
And still, 1 year later, from the day, not from the bottom, 1 year later from the day of the bear market, you're at 22% average. And we can even take that another step. The three-year annualized return after that particular day, 14.25%. And the five-year annualized return, 13.27, and each one of those is above the long-term market history. So if anything could be derived from that discussion, it would have to be, this is the time to buy, not the time to sell. Although you might want to drag your feet doing it a little bit, just because usually it does go down a little bit further. But it's a good lesson, and I think on top of that, another good lesson is that you haven't lost a thing unless you sell anything. That's the only way you've actually lost any money at all. Still doesn't look very pretty, but that's not always the issue, is it? So, all right, we're going to have to take another break. Adam, you got 30 seconds worth of wrap-up. Anything else you want to say?
Yeah, I just wanted to mention, too, that the housing market, mortgage rates hit above 6% this week,
yeah.
And we're seeing a real fall off in demand, almost a cliff.
Yeah, and Angela was saying, I don't know if you were tuning in time to do that, the inventory a year ago has about doubled by today, the for sale inventory. Oh.
And that should come with an asterisk, as the inventory was so low a year ago.
It was, and that has to be put into the discussion, absolutely. But I thought that was an interesting point, and that interest rate jumped over 6, but the average countrywide is in the upper 5s right now. Still an okay time to buy, folks. We'll be right back. Don't go anywhere. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And I'm Megan Todd.
And for this period of time, Megan has a topic that, she's a millennial, which kind of has a bad connotation, but millennials are actually becoming real people one by one. She's leading the way on a lot of them. But they're getting to that age where certain priorities are really important. So the topic that she's going to talk about today kind of got a jump start with the pandemic. But now it's having a resurgence. I guess you would have to say it had a surgence.
that could be.
Because now it's having a resurgence.
That's very true.
But I think it's very germane to what is going on today. And if younger people are getting into it, only good can come from this. And that topic is?
It's actually gardening. So I want to, like Steve said, the original kind of boom for this industry or surgeons was back in 2020, and this a group of researchers through different countries, and the main three were Australia, Germany, and the United States, and they did a research paper. It's like 80 pages long. It's really interesting. And they surveyed survey responses that they took were from June to August of 2020, and the first thing they wanted to know was why everybody started gardening more, and they found the increased interest in gardening when the first wave of COVID hit in 2020, because a lot of people felt isolated, anxious, and depressed, and it was seen to help improve mental health. But on the more monetary side, it was due to supply distribution issues and feeling insecure about where the food was coming from, who was touching it. And a lot of people chose to become more self-sufficient and grew their own food at home. And because of COVID, kind of bringing it up to 2022, COVID created almost 18.3 million new gardeners,
okay.
Mostly millennials. Oh. And while clothing and like furniture and home furnishings saw a decrease in online sales of like 68% and 36% respectively, online gardening went up by 100%.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Was that the time when seeds were getting short?
I got you. Oh, okay. One of the largest.
I remember a shortage
exactly.
of seeds.
Exactly. It's still going on.
Huh. I didn't realize it was pegged to this particular phenomenon.
Yep. One of the largest direct-to-consumer seed companies stated that their sales doubled when the pandemic first hit. And going from pandemic-level sales now to dealing with, like, all of the inflation and everything, the company said that they're still behind on orders.
Wow.
It's 2 years. That's an insane.
Well, where do seeds come from? Trees?
The plants that they make.
It's kind of a rough ramping up, I would think, because you're trying to sell the food, you're trying to get the seeds, all that stuff.
Exactly.
It's an interesting topic.
Exactly. And so that brings us to 2022, the food index. So food at home index rose about 11.9% over the last 12 months. And
yeah,
that's
anybody who believes that, call me.
No, like purchasing, going out purchasing and cooking at
11,
home.
Yeah. You think it's only 11, you're crazy.
Well, it's the largest 12-month increase since the period ending in April of 1979.
I believe it. And it's you go do shopping all the time.
Yep.
Everybody who does. If you could find something that were only up 11%, you'd be so happy.
Yeah, well, it's across different food groups. I mean, fruits and vegetables saw an increase of 8.2% in that category alone. Mm-hmm. survey in April of 2020 shows 42% of Americans are growing their own produce because an average garden costs $70 and can produce $600 worth of produce.
Wow.
Yeah, average. And nice.
And you know where it's been. And
exactly.
And what was used on it.
Exactly. Top 10 homegrown vegetables, 86% of gardeners grow tomatoes, 47% grow cucumbers, and then it goes down to sweet peppers, beans, carrots, summer squash, onions, hot peppers for the spicy people. I know Adam and I are in that club.
Uh-huh.
And then lettuce and peas.
Was that Adam?
I said no doubt. And the hot.
Yes, Adam, you know, ever since he was a little kid, he can eat things that, just say, if I touched my tongue with them, I would suffer immensely.
My dad ate a whole Tabasco pepper that we grew. The coughing fit was a little bit of a triumph, since the man never does.
Yeah,
but, I mean, personal thoughts, I mean, for me, growing food has been very therapeutic, but it's also great to know where my foods come from.
Yeah, and you're not just talking about this.
No.
You're doing it.
Yes, we did a makeshift little greenhouse. I mean, it's not like, it's enclosed with like bug and critter netting, but that's about it. We have some peppers growing. But what I have found is the most amazing thing that I like about this whole gardening thing is it is both instantly and continuously gratifying. So you get the job well done right when you're doing it, and then it's like watching things grow. It's continuous.
Yeah, and everything takes a little bit different timing to ripen. And
so exactly.
You get these 1 week and those 1 week, that sort of thing. Now, if anybody out there can figure out how to get a tomato that tastes like it's from Wisconsin in August, please come to the office.
I would have to taste that to figure out what it was.
You've been down here 30 years now, and There isn't much I miss about the North, but those tomatoes during the late summer, that's one of them.
You'd need to look up the soil composition that they typically grow in.
One of our gurus, one of the ones that your dad reads and I read, he moved from New Jersey, and he's made a career out of trying to grow the perfect tomato. He says he's got it, but he doesn't share them. Nobody that says they've got them shares them.
That could be one of two things. They really have it, and they just don't want people copying them, or they don't have it, and they don't want to admit they failed.
Well, if they're good enough, I'd just eat them all before anybody got there.
That's true.
Yeah. I love good tomatoes. Anyway, I think that's a wonderful topic, and anybody's got a little patch of their yard. It's not that hard to get started in it. Obviously, as you said, not that expensive. And the production, not to mention the convenience, is right there.
Indoor hydroponic systems are insane.
They're huge,
but they're also just massively expensive. But the price went from, you know, more reasonable, but with everything going on.
Yeah, the demand curve, which has been basically straight up lately, will start to level off. But I think growing your own is probably a topic that is here to stay for a while. Think about it. What's Bill Gates spending all this money on?
Well, he's buying all of this land so that no one can farm it.
Bingo. Buying up farmland, because who controls the world?
Food.
You got it. So there's a lot to be said for becoming a little more self-sufficient. Now, if you're an indoor air conditioning couch potato like me, I'd have to hire somebody.
Well, no, like I said, those indoor systems are very high tech. You just set them up and then reap the benefits.
Well, anyway, I like that one. I think it's a topic whose time is definitely upon us, and there'll be more. All right, for those of you, the ones born after June 30th, 1949, you're the people I talk to frequently because, as you know, I'm an avid follower of the Secure 2.0 Act. For the fairly obvious reason, I guess, that I'm one of the people affected by this. Well, every week it seems something new happens in the Senate. If you remember back in March, the version of Secure 2.0 that is in the House passed by 404 to something which is just an unheard of breakdown for the House of Representatives these days. But then in the Senate, we have had a version of it that's been worked on, and there's a couple other committees in Congress who have a couple other bills that are related to this, and I'll describe them briefly after the break. But what's happening now is that the original and Committee A and Committee B with their versions of it are blending them with the intent of taking the final product from there and merging it with the final product from the House so as not to have to put this through a whole bunch more discussion, which means in a nutshell, I would say the odds of this thing passing are outstanding at this point, because I'll tell you who's involved in it too, but they're from all sides of the realm there, and it makes a difference to some people for different reasons, and we'll talk about that a little bit right after the break. So don't go anywhere. We'll pay some bills. Be right back. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And I'm Megan Todd.
And back to 2.0. Many of you probably remember with the first SECURE Act, we were able to get an extension on required minimum distributions for those of us who otherwise would have fallen into that in that year. So if you were born after June 30th, and that I know that seems like sort of a stupid date, but if you recall under the old rules for years and years and years, the required minimum distribution rules started at age 70 and a half. And if there's anything you can think of that's stupider than having a number like 70 and a half, nobody ever understood it. I never have read a decent explanation of why, but it was like that for a long, long time. Well, because of COVID and everything that happened, some relief actually got passed through Congress, and one of them was they changed that 70 and a half to 72. But you had to be coming up on that. You couldn't already have been subject to it because you were not grandfathered. You weren't allowed to take a year off or anything like that after the year that they just gave us and canceled RMDs altogether, which, of course, a lot of us took. And you know, I always have to remind people, most people withdraw their RMDs or more anyway because it's part of their retirement income. But for that group of us who today and beyond would rather postpone them because a lot of us are still working, let's face it. For those of us, this is a godsend. So when that happened, that we got an extra year, then there was very soon a rumor that they were going to try to take it up again to 75. Well, that's been kind of negotiated back in the current version of Secure 2.0. So it would go immediately to 73 instead of 72, and each 5 years for the next decade, it would go then to 74 and 75. So now we have the HELP Committee I have talked about before. It's called the Health, Education, Labor, and Pensions Committee, in conjunction with the Retirement Improvement and Savings Enhancement to Supplement Healthy Investments. Thank God they were able to figure out a short way for the nest egg, or what they call the Rise and Shine Act. Now, that's from a play, I think. Rise and Shine. Yeah,
Early Birds.
Maybe my wife knows. I'm not that good at that sort of thing. Anyway, those have been blended in there. So now the Rise and Shine is being merged with the Secure 2.0 that passed the Senate, it's being deliberated in the Senate. So it's gotten bigger and more complex. This was pushed very hard by Patty Murray, senator from Washington, uber liberal. And I think that's a good thing because we've got to have people on both sides promoting the pieces of this that they like. So the insured retirement income people, you probably would know them better as the annuity industry. And they're pushing this very hard because part of it is making annuities easier inside retirement plans. And I'm not going to make a comment on that, except making it easier is okay with me anytime. Making it mandatory, which I fear always comes afterwards, that would not be fine with me. But I'm getting ahead of myself, and I don't want to be. It's also for small employers. It's going to make it easier to get people started in some savings plans that the company can sponsor. And this one's a little bit confusing to me, but basically it would be an auto enrollment 3% set aside toward an eventual goal of $2,500, which is supposed to help people get started savings and not having to dig into it in an emergency basis on their regular pension plan or whatever. So that's one thing that's going on right now. And added to that now, we have a new one from the Finance Committee, and this one is called the Enhancing American Retirement Now Act, or EARN. So that is also now being combined with the HELP, the Rise and Shine, and the Secure 2.0. And if that doesn't sound complicated enough, you weren't paying attention. But here, we've got some sponsors on the right on this thing, too. What's his name? I've lost it. The senator that's retiring from North Carolina, Richard Burr, who is, well, in my business we call him a rhino, but he is on the other side. So now we've got multiple sponsors on both sides of the aisle trying to take these three things, put them together, which would come together before the end of this year and be voted on, probably passed by the biggest margin in the Senate of the year, and that would convert the RMD age up to 73 on its way to eventually going to 75. And there's some other little goodies in there, too. More details will follow when they get it done. But I like to keep people up to date on that because I know there are some people, including me, who are hanging on to the concept that we're probably going to be able to postpone them again, and therefore we don't want to get these things out of your accounts too fast because they probably won't allow us to put them back. Now, speaking of Richard Burr, he's at it again.
Oh, goodness.
This time he's linked up with Bob Casey, Democrat from Pennsylvania, and they've got something that I am kind of intrigued about. I just actually found this morning. They've introduced the College Savings Recovery Act to allow excess 529 money, in other words, that wasn't spent by the intended beneficiary. They have a provision that would allow that money to be rolled into a Roth IRA instead of withdrawing it taxably and with a potential 10% penalty. Now, right up front, I like this because what the heck? You didn't deduct it, putting it into the 529 because you can't. But if you get it out, they want to tax it if you don't use it right. So let's just avoid all that and add to retirement at the same time. Now, there's a couple things that I have questions about in this, and one of them is this language that the person writing this obviously does not quite understand the English language to my satisfaction. But it says this bipartisan bill will allow parents to put unused savings for their children's education into their retirement account. Okay, people, you know what a reference means? Where does the word there point in reference? The subject of this thing is the parents, and then the objective is the kids' education. So their retirement accounts doesn't tell me anything. It's got to be clarified. But I was talking to my research department this morning about this thing and some of the unusual features of the 529. Nobody can deduct a 529, as I mentioned. But once you open a 529 and put money into it, the owner of the account, the technical owner, the guy who opens it and puts the money in, that control of the account stays with the owner. But it's the only thing that I've ever found that at the same time, although it's your money, you put it in there, you have an intended beneficiary, and you have total control over it, but it's not in your estate. Now, in these days of really high estate tax exemptions, that's less important to most people than it has been in the past. But maybe you'll agree with me, and maybe you won't, that I think the future of the estate tax is that it's going to wind up being lowered. And it might still be pretty reasonably high, but as the market rebounds and inflation goes rampant and so on, estates are going to be growing again. And a lot of people, a lot of parents and grandparents even, would love to know that this option is there, that they can open a 529 plan and you can put up to 5 years of free gifts in them up front, like 75 or, I don't remember, what's it?
75,000. It's 15
okay.
a year.
I thought it went to 16. I don't know. I don't remember. I haven't gotten all of this stuff put back in the appropriate brain cells yet. But anyway, for each kid out there, you can do that and get it out of your estate. Now, if that has to come back into the estate on a taxable basis, that's not nearly as enticing to me as if once the kid uses up either all or none of it, or what they're going to use of it or none of it. If you could then more or less gift that money to the kid who has already attained an age where this would matter, then convert it into a Roth IRA, wouldn't that be a wonderful head start for people to give their kids and grandkids? So I'm all for it. I need to know more about it. And as I learn things about it, I will keep everybody posted, of course. So a few little points of interest for today. And Adam, you got anything you want to wrap up with in the next 15 seconds?
Yeah, and well, if the market got you down, your portfolio is down, just because you don't own Bitcoin.
Oh, yeah, we'll talk a little more Bitcoin next week, too. There's going to be some very unhappy people. All right, we'll see you next week. Thanks for listening. This is the Vanwee Financial Hour.